from the LA Convention Center on the west coast of America. It's the GameSpy Livewire. Livewire.
It's day two. Day two at GameSpy. The Livewire session's live and on the air. And those of you in the chat room, thanks for hanging in there as long as you have today. We'll be here tomorrow as well. And joining us is Jeff Anderson. And Jeff, I'm just shocked. You have this cool announcement that just came out moments ago. We're all standing around going, what? We thought we had a scoop. You have a bigger scoop. What'd you guys announce today? Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Oh, great. Yeah, we announced today that we're actually going to be working with Atari, formerly Infogrames, to be doing Dungeons & Dragons Online with them.
Dungeons & Dragons Online. Now, yeah. we were going to talk about Middle Earth Online.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that, too.
But sure. This was like news to us. You just released this today?
Yeah, the press release came out this morning.
Cool. So. And Mark Surface has joined us.
Wow.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hey, good, Jeff. Good to see you. Nice to see you again.
Did you have questions you wanted to ask?
I just wanted to hang out.
Last
time I saw Jeff was in Vegas. So.
For which show?
The DICE show.
Yeah, what...
you went to see DICE?
Yeah.
No. It's called the Digital Interactive something or other.
There was lots of drinking involved.
But, I understand.
Yeah, and hookers.
Lots of hookers.
And a pound of cocaine.
Good Lord.
Well, not for me, but for Jeff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go.
Yeah, it was hard to take.
Children, don't do this at home.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us a little bit, first of all, about... let's start with the newest first, Dungeons & Dragons Online. What's the story there?
Yeah, it's really a great opportunity. It's one of those franchises that I think everybody who's been in games has always been a part of. When we first get into it, we all really loved playing D&D. I was a big D&D pen and paper guy. Had always been passionate about the franchise, and it's really one of those first role-playing games that brings people in. So to get an opportunity to work with those creative folks over at WotC Wizard of the Coast, Hasbro, and Atari, it's just really a dream coming true, bringing that to life. And then when you think about what D&D is, it's about community. It's about guys sitting around eating popcorn, drinking stale Mountain Dew, and doing that at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And the online version of it really gives people an opportunity to bring that together yet again.
Right.
So you know, when you saw a lot of the single-player D&D games, you lost that community, and now we're bringing it back.
Gotcha. In terms of what you expect from this, I mean, do you have any projections as to how many people you think, and how many people you'll bring back into the gaming fold that maybe left because they did stuff in the 70s and 80s rather than in today? Because when Dungeons & Dragons was big, it was back then.
Yes and no. I think if you look at the third edition set that they just came out with, they sold millions of copies of it already.
Sure.
It's brought a big different audience in. I mean, much younger generation of people have been playing it now. There's actually kind of the old people like ourselves who played it in the...
Pen and paper.
Yeah, but even then.
All right.
And the interactive products have been obviously huge. Neverwinter Nights been a big success, Baldur's Gate. And I think what we're going to try and do is faithfully represent that lineage, bring it to the next generation, bring it to online, and allow fellowships and communities really to play around that.
Get your questions ready in the chat room. We're talking with Jeff Anderson, Middle Earth Online.
Yeah, another big franchise.
And that was an announcement here at the show, right?
Yeah, I feel so incredibly lucky. I mean, Turbine's gotten the chance to work with probably two of the best partners in the space and clearly two of the premier franchises. And Middle Earth Online, it is the father of all fantasy. You know, Tolkien's books have really defined it. The movies have redefined it, I think, from the entertainment space. And we have an opportunity to take that game. And I think for both products, really, you talk about MMORPGs. That's a very long acronym.
Mm-hmm.
But it's massively multiplayer online role-playing games. For too long now, I feel that people have been spending time worrying about the MM part, the massively multiplayer, and has kind of lost behind all of that as the ORPG. We want to start pushing that forward. I think we want to be the company who's starting to build online role-playing games. Community is critical. Fellowships are great. You know, parties are important, and that's the bedrock upon which we build everything. But what happened to the role-playing aspects? And I think that's the focus for us. You see other companies out there, they want to build big, giant, empty vistas and populate them with spawns and have monsters run around. We actually want to create story for people to be part of. There's a joke, right? We talk about this at work all the time. So you think of FedEx Quest. You probably heard of FedEx Quest. Go to this guy, pick up this box, and deliver it to this person over here. Yeah, that's for postmen. We don't want to actually have that in the game. We actually want to have it for heroes. And the only rats that you're going to see in our games are the ones that are now 6 inches tall, right?
Okay.
That's a real emphasis for us. How do we bring the role-playing back in these products? How do we bring story and context into it?
Cool. Let's talk to the chat room, see what we got there.
So people are wondering, really, just a general question. How many years does it take to develop a massively multiplayer game from conception to getting it on the shelf?
It really depends. I think we're real fortunate being at Turbine. We've had now 10 years of experience in building these products. If you haven't done that before, it's going to take you probably 4 years to get it from start to finish. With our existing technology, because we have a real head start, we can do it maybe in a year or two. a full hardcore production, and then about 6 months of beta and probably 6 months of pre-production. So we're still looking at about 2 to 2.5 years.
Right. So when's the release date for the things that you've announced?
Well, no release date has been announced for D&D. We just did the announcement of the partnership and the relationship and the product.
Right.
Middle-earth Online, they're talking about doing it in fall of 04.
Fall of 04. So yeah. You're very early in the process there.
Yes and no. I mean, we've been working on it for some time now with them. We're showing here at the floor. I think you guys will probably have some screenshots up. It's a huge developmental growth for us, but we're really working on a bedrock. I mean, we had, with Asheron's Call, we had a really great foundation of technology that we're able to leverage and redeploy. We're making numerous upgrades to that at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Back to the chat room.
Yes, Stealth is wondering, how much popularity do you think that massively multiplayer gaming can sustain? Like, I don't know, how many games do you think that the current audience for it can sustain? Do you see the audience expanding as rapidly as the games are coming out for it?
Yeah, the audience continues to expand. We're seeing, and most analysts are saying, about 30% of compounded annual growth on an annual basis. What's interesting, though, is the number of products...
Which means it ends in 4 years, by the way. I hate to break it to anybody, but, you know, how far can you go with that,
well,
at 30% a year?
Yeah, I mean, clearly we have a lot of people who are moving from the single-player to multiplayer space.
Right.
There's no reason that anybody who's playing single-player today wouldn't like to play an online game.
It's right.
Just, they're just so much more interesting to play with other people. The question, obviously, is with so many great products that are coming out there, we see a lot of good development being done by a lot of different studios. Is there some kind of capacity that people don't want to actually become part of it? The question ultimately with any business that we're in, if it's a real-time strategy game or if it's a first-person shooter game, you always see the same process. Somebody's an innovator, a lot of people follow into the space, there's a glut of products, a lot of products fail and fall out of favor, and then at the end there's one or two or three companies which really are premiered as the earmark companies in the space. We see it all the time.
Right.
So I think Turbine's perspective is that our job is to make sure that we continue to build great fan bases, we do a good job with our communities, we deliver high quality product, and really work with premier brands in the space. And our goal is to be that number one product company in, you know, 3 or 4 years when everyone else is looking around trying to figure out what the next business model is.
What's your day like? Is it spent mostly doing administrative stuff, doing deal making stuff, or is it still day-to-day involved with the design and the implementation of the game?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. I think it's a combination of a variety of things. One of the best parts about being the CEO of a company is that you end up managing all aspects of it. Without a doubt, the biggest asset that we have is people. So I spend a lot of time trying to help coach, mentor folks as they grow in their positions and they understand how to make great games. I give all the credit in the world to people behind the scenes making the games happen. I'll give advice to them, I'll give feedback, I try to use some experience to help guide them along, but they're the real creative visionaries behind the product. Atish Salvi, who's the guy who's doing Middle-earth Online as a producer, Katie Finan, Chris Clay, Mark Holmes, a creative director. You know, these are the guys who are actually making these products happen every day.
Right.
And I can kind of help them along and give them some advice, but that's, you know, I'm so blessed to have a terrific team of people working
on the
project.
Do you miss working on the line?
You know, there's always a part of you. I think anybody who's been making games for a long time wishes that you had that chance. But I think what I do now is so much more entertaining. At some point in my life, maybe I'll want to go back and just go do that again. But
mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's so many other things to be done. I'm addicted to learning in a lot of ways. I love to learn new things. And, you know, the position that I'm in right now continues to challenge me in different directions, whether it's financing and trying to get the, you know, talking to some of the investments that we've got in venture community, talking about how we're going to get growth capital and build up the business, bring in more console development, which will be a big thing for our company in
the
next year.
So, in some ways, you being the CEO is sort of like a game for you, too.
Oh, yeah, completely.
With a different end game.
It's a massive simulation.
There you go. Back to the chat room.
Yeah, we had a couple good questions. One that's come up again and again is, how are you guys dealing with the issue of cheating in some of these new games? Have you learned anything from your previous experiences and that you're going to apply to these new games?
Yeah, that's, you know, and that's a great question. And along with that, I think it's a very important point to make. In the work that we did with Asheron's Call, a lot of that was actually run and supported by Microsoft. With the products that we're looking at now, Turbine's going to be for the first time responsible for actually managing and directing those communities themselves. This means, obviously, how we're going to manage macroing, how we're going to manage cheating, how we're going to enforce that. It's a real terrific opportunity. I think we have some very strong positions on what we believe are the necessities for making great community. And you know, we're not real big fans of cheating. I think cheating ultimately destroys the quality of the game that you're trying to build. You want people to feel, really, in a real serious way, I think there's almost a social contract when you have people come into your world. They're putting in a certain amount of time. They feel like they want to get a certain amount of value out of there. And our obligation is try to make sure that the world feels and plays as fairly as possible. Now, nobody can be expected to try to get rid of all those problems problems. But I think that when you'll see the next two games that we're working on and games thereafter that we're going to manage, it's going to be a very clear position about how we feel the games need to have an honest playing field where people can get in, they can have growth, that they can have fun, they can make friendships, and they can do it with some degree of, you know, kind of certainty and security.
Right. Back to the chat room.
Yeah, there's been a couple questions about Middle Earth Online. Some people want to know if it's going to be based around the actual events in the book or if it's going to be more open-ended, just kind of set in the environment of Middle Earth, how that's going to be handled.
Yeah, the answer is yes
to all that.
Yeah, and a bag of chips, right? So what we when we sat down, we started designing really early on the product. We asked ourselves, well, gosh, you know, this is such an amazing franchise. There's so much there, wonderful character, wonderful settings, creatures, everything. How can you actually build this game and do it justice? So you have this opportunity to do it, and we don't want to mess it up. We want to do it right. So we made the decision early on, let's not try to build all of Middle-earth the first time, because there's such a difference between building out Eriador, which is where the first book takes place, kind of the Fellowship, where you see them go through Bree and the Shire and even Moria. And then there's new areas that you go to in the second and third books where you see Lothlorien and kind of the east side, or down to Rohan or Gondor or Mordor. And we wanted to make sure that we delivered all that faithfully. So we've actually broken up the project into a series of very intelligent stages, really phases or books, just like they did. And we want to make sure that we continue to deliver on them. So the first release that we're going to be doing, which is going to be coming out in 04, is going to be Eriador. It's that first part where the book takes place. Now, in terms of how that interacts with the characters, you're going to see all of those different characters weaving themselves in and out of the storyline. It actually occurs kind of contemporaneous with the Fellowship moving through the world. For the most part, in Eriador, you're going to be dealing with the fallout after the Fellowship has done certain things. What happens to this landscape? What are the other challenges that are being faced by those communities?
Right.
So you're going to be seeing the Gandalfs, interacting with them, getting letters and communications. At the same time, you're going to be going on new opportunities and explorations, meeting all the people that you didn't see in the movies but you loved in the book, you know, Tom Bombadils, or going out and actually learning what's the deal with Farmer Maggot, and really kind of building that whole robustness behind the story and the fiction that you first see.
Cool.
It's amazing because it's such big shoes, right? It's J.R.R. Tolkien is the premier writer.
Plus, you're being entrusted with a very, very rabid fan base and franchise, and you've got to do it right. So you've got to take it and make sure that you do everything you possibly can to do it as faithfully as you can. And
yeah, so absolutely.
To do it as slowly, you know, and to do it in phases makes sense.
Vivendi is really smart about that. They're so terrific. Chris Taylor is and Vijay Lakshman, who runs production over there for the online side. They're just really great, smart people. They understand the space really well. They understand Tolkien very well. I couldn't ask for better partners than Vivendi has been on the project. And they were great. They brought in a guy like Daniel Greenberg, who understands the Tolkien space. He's an expert in the place. And he has really helped us shepherd the workings with the Tolkien Enterprise.
Are you nervous at all about the recent headlines that Vivendi's been enjoying?
The acquisition rumors?
Well, just, you know, in general, Vivendi has had some troubles over the last year, and I'm wondering if that's at all affecting your space.
Yeah, actually not at all. And maybe that's all the more credit to the team that I'm working with over there. They've made it so easy to work with them. In the decade they've been making games, I've never worked with better partners than these guys so far.
Cool.
In production. They're just they're great gamers. They're also great businessmen. I can't worship better partners. And they've kept us really focused on the task. I think that's important. They understand that what we need to get done, they give us the kind of capital and they give us the input and the design necessary to do that. They've been huge, huge supporters, and I can't enough good things about them.
So, all right, cool.
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen? I actually think ultimately it'll be good for them to have some freedom and control, and we'll see what happens next.
All right, back to the chat room.
Some people are wondering, just kind of some general questions, is it hard to come up with like the voices and dialogues for these types of games? How much work goes really into to writing things up like that?
Well, for Middle-earth Online, our focus is really about the role-playing, and so we take a lot of effort now in building up these characters and building up the dialogue and kind of thinking about what we want these people to be like. And in some cases, no one's really heard a lot of these people have a voice before. So what are the personality behind some of these characters that we've never really actually had a chance to interact with? And the single-player games that they're doing, I think, are terrific, but we have to go yet another layer deeper. We actually need to build out the world and actually then let people play in it and change it.
And are that you going to allow voice chat?
Oh, within the game itself? You know, I don't think we're going to be supporting that. The biggest issue there is just bandwidth. It just takes up a lot.
Because to me, it's a perfect opportunity to do something that I haven't heard anybody do, and that's to let people alter their voices during voice
sure,
chat.
Sure, like voice fonts.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be a great opportunity for a product. I think the concern is that if you put that in, it's so much data that gets sent down the pipe that it really slows down all the other packets, and it's very expensive that way from a game player perspective. Mm-hmm. So maybe you could imagine a situation where you went to a social place where you didn't need a lot of responsiveness where you could do that, but it's not not been a core focus of us. For us right now, it's about really truly being honest about building out the War of the Ring, allowing the player to choose the sides of being good towards the virtuous side of the Rangers, or kind of being completely evil towards the evil side of the Nazguls. And that choice of corruption, good versus evil, that's kind of the central point where you see those consequences from those actions. And,
gotcha.
And that's kind of the focus for us right now.
Right.
Voice chants are cool, but ultimately it's just one more piece of the puzzle. How do you build communities?
We're talking with Jeffrey Anderson, who's president and CEO of Turbine. And you prefer Jeff or Jeffrey?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Just don't call me late for dinner.
All right, there you go. Back to the chat room, see what's up.
Yes, Mickey wants to know, you guys do a lot of fantasy-themed massively multiplayer games. He's wondering if you ever have had to face the decision of whether you should do more of an action-oriented or first-person shooter-oriented type of game.
Yeah, we've talked about that. I think so far the choice about doing massively multiplayer fantasy games has been more fate than anything else. I think if another great franchise equivalent to the ones that we're working with came along, I think we'd be interested in doing that as well. I don't think we're just locked into the Men in Tights category. In some ways, I think people would love to do something else because making skeletons, again, sometimes gets a little bit tiring. But I think that everyone in general thinks that it's clearly such a unique place because you get to live out some fantasies that people have had since childhood. It's very understandable and acceptable, and people can get into the roles very easily. It's well-defined. That makes it easy. So I think that we're not excluding those brands in the future. In the near term or even in the midterm, as a company, our focus is on the online space. We want to be in the role-playing space. The exact genre of the fiction is kind of something that's open for us.
Gotcha. More in the chat room?
Some guy's just asking a general question about what's the record for the most number of people that you've seen playing one of your games at any one time?
Gosh. Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I actually probably don't know the answer to that one. Many thousands, I'd say, tens of thousands. So it's great. I mean, I think the fan reaction has been so positive. When we put the website up for Middle Earth Online, it was incredible. I mean, we've had thousands of registrations already just in the first weekend that we had.
You should have seen the reaction here in the room when people found out about it. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think we've had something like over maybe by now it's probably close to 2 million hits on the website. I mean, we were over 1 million hits really quickly, and I know we passed 1.5 million. So, in terms of uniques, I think we have like over 500,000 unique people visiting the site, and that really speaks to the power of the franchise. But also, I think it really is about what we can try to do and deliver to make this an authentic place that they want to play in.
Great. Jeffrey Anderson, President and CEO of Turbine, thank you so much for
being
on GameSpy.
My pleasure. Wonderful to meet you guys.
GameSpy Livewire. And we're going to talk with Jeff Briggs coming up next. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get some things set up, and then we'll be back with more GameSpy Livewire in just a moment.